It's Tuesday, May 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello. Coming up, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry makes another push for peace in Syria. Protesters have withdrawn from Baghdad, but political uncertainty remains.
I want to reiterate that the Scarborough Shoal is an inherent part of the Chinese territory.
Also ahead, China says it will ignore an arbitration ruling on the South China Sea. New music from Martina McBride. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry continued his diplomatic push to salvage the two-month-old cessation of hostilities in Syria. He was to meet Monday in Geneva with UN Syria envoy Stephane de Mistura and Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeir. He held talks with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov on Friday and Jordan's top diplomat Nasser Judeh on Sunday.
We are talking directly with the Russians even now. The hope is that we can make some progress, but the United Nations Security Council resolution calls for a full countrywide cessation, and also for all of the country to be accessible for humanitarian assistance. Obviously, that hasn't happened and isn't happening. So I hope in the course of the conversations that I have here and the work that our teams are doing, importantly, in order to try to zero in on and pin down the modalities of reaffirming the cessation. And so these are critical hours. We look for Russia's cooperation. We obviously look for the regime to listen to Russia and to respond to the international community's powerful statement through the UN Security Council.
Russia said talks are underway with ally Damascus about extending its ceasefire to the northern city of Aleppo, where the British Observatory for Human Rights said that fighting has taken more than 250 civilian lives since April 22nd. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez has been following developments from Mr. Kerry's visit, and he shared them a short time ago with International Edition host Susan Yaki.
It's a very, very slow, painful process because, of course, his visit to Geneva is complicated by the fact that one of the key players in this whole affair, which is Russia, is not present at those talks. So Secretary Kerry is doing what he can, discussing with other partners, the Saudis, the Jordanians, and the UN Special Envoy for Syria, Staffan de Mistura. He had meetings with all three of them, both Sunday night just off the plane and then all day Monday. And what has emerged is what the Secretary says are several proposals. The United States has called on Russia to help stop the carnage in Aleppo because, well, it has influence over the Assad government and believes that Moscow can, in fact, step in to stop that. The problem here is whether Moscow will do it or not. Thus far, they have defended those airstrikes.
Well, do we have any idea what's in these proposals?
Secretary Kerry is giving no details on what those proposals are. Observers say that they could include a partial ceasefire, that is, one that will protect at least certain parts of Aleppo. The Secretary's position, the United States' position, has been all along that the ceasefire agreement reached in February and that was brokered by the U.S. and Russia should cover all of Syria, including all of Aleppo, and that the airstrikes that have been going on over the past 11 days, claiming more than 200 lives are outside of that ceasefire or in violation of it. And so the efforts are for if Assad cannot be convinced to stop the airstrikes in Aleppo, in the entire city, at least have some safe zones created.
And what about Russia? I mean, you touched on this a little bit, but why aren't they showing up at the party?
Well, they have defended Syria's actions, the Syrian government's actions in Aleppo, saying that these are anti-terrorist operations, that the Syrian warplanes have been going in there to take out operatives of the al-Nusra Front, which both the United States and Russia, and also, of course, the Assad government, consider a terrorist group. And so Russia says these attacks are justified. They're part of a cleanup effort as the Assad government moves into secure Aleppo, a very important, very strategic point for them since we're talking about Syria's largest city.
And what have we been hearing out of Aleppo?
The Syrian military called for a temporary calm starting on Friday. That was meant to stop some of the criticism that really has intensified since the attack on a hospital that was supported by Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders. That was a terrible scene in which children were killed and medical staff that included one of the city's last pediatricians. That was a real public relations debacle, and just the horror of the scene mobilized, it seems, everyone to call for an end to the carnage. So the government, the Syrian government, called this temporary calm, and that seemed to help. There were reports that some of the fighting did subside throughout the country, although there are reports on Monday of continued attacks in Aleppo.
A U.S. State Department spokesman said efforts to salvage the cessation of hostilities represent a real test of Russia's commitment to the peace process in Syria. In a background briefing late last week, a senior State Department official also accused Damascus of obstructing humanitarian access in parts of the country. We turn now to our social media segment. International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins me here in Studio 22 with What's Buzzing Online. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, let's start with a short clip about Carly Fiorina.
Sure. She's in Indiana with GOP presidential contender Ted Cruz. She stumbled out of view on stage after introducing Cruz at an event earlier today that was caught on camera. And what was also captured is Cruz still shaking hands with other people on stage while she's falling. So these two may be running mates, but maybe not mates.
Right. Well, what's the public reaction like online?
Many Twitter users found it quite funny, but some people did express concern for her safety and the media coverage of the event. One user tweeted, "Not going to lie, I'm a little disappointed. Reports have left out whether Carly Fiorina is actually okay after a stumble." Others say it's a metaphor for the Cruz campaign. A local radio host tweeted, "Carly falling off stage, a child telling Cruz he sucks, Heidi calling Ted an immigrant. The hashtag IN primary is not team Cruz's finest hour."
Oh my, well, what's a hashtag that we'll be seeing a lot of in the next 24 hours?
That's right. Also trending today is a bit of tech news from Yahoo. Yahoo's annual report showed its CEO, Marissa Mayer, is going to get severance package worth $50 million and if and when the company gets sold. The package includes $3 million in cash.
Well, she's been trying to turn that company around for about 4 years. Mm-hmm. What's the social media reaction like to the severance package?
Well, some people commented the CEOs responsible for leading the companies should not receive multi-million dollar compensation packages for failing. Many other people also argued the more money the upper management gets paid, the less there is to pay for the lower tier workers. When I dug deeper into the comments online, some people did say it's actually a small amount compared to other quote-unquote golden parachutes. Jim, back to you.
Well, thanks for the wrap-up. We'll be landing on ground now as G tweets for our program's account at VOA_IE from her own account at G Abby Lee. I'm out there as well at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA's International Edition. We check some of the top stories in the Asia region. Afghanistan's Ghani expedites executions. Brutal Bangladesh killings raise worries about secular traditions. In Pakistan, Trump wrong on jailed doctor who helped find bin Laden. Islamic State eradicating Afghan poppy crops. Bodies of famed American climbers low in bridges found in Himalayas. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOA.com website and on our VOA mobile app, or you can follow my Twitter feed at VOA Stevenson. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Hundreds of protesters, mostly allied with Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, withdrew from Baghdad's heavily fortified Green Zone on Sunday after breaching security barriers 24 hours earlier. For months, they have pressed demands for reform of a political system they argue breeds corruption. The protesters, who left out of respect for a major Shiite pilgrimage, vowed to return if lawmakers and the government of Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi fail to act. Ambassador James Jeffrey, distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute for Near Policy, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the protest is a reflection of political infighting between Sadr and former Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki.
First of all, they were the forces of former Prime Minister Maliki, who didn't want to see Abadi's reform program carried out because it undercuts Maliki's power in the parliament. And the other is Muqtadar al-Sadr's group, which wanted to see even more technocratic members of parliament and even more of an overturning of the political party landscape in the parliament and in the government, even though Muqtadar is one of the major parties there with some 40 or 50 seats. There are huge internal divisions and differences on where to go in the country. In the first order, this is a struggle among various Shia factions, but it has gained a life of its own, and it's going to be very hard for Abadi to have the credibility and the support to restore things and continue governing as he has before, or to institute the kind of far-reaching reforms. A lot of this is because he's a weak leader, and a lot of it is because things aren't going well in Iraq, and a lot of it is because it's a divided country.
What does this do for the fight against Islamic State?
It does three things. First of all, to the extent there's worries about masses of protesters, and remember, these are Muqtadar al-Sadr's protesters, he also has his own army. It means that important elements of Iraqi's better fighting forces are held in reserve around Baghdad, and that much of the attention of the military leadership is on protecting Baghdad and protecting the leadership rather than planning for the fight. That's the first problem. The second problem is a weakened Abadi is more under the influence of the Iranians on certain things. And one of those things is to minimize the role of the United States. But as we've seen, absent an ever bigger and more central American role in fighting this thing, we're not going to make much progress against ISIS. And then the third thing is you just need a good leader at the top to motivate troops and senior commanders to make good decisions and to hold with those decisions. Abadi is at best weak in this regard and preoccupied with this crisis and basically on the run, at least the way he's been for the last 2 days. It's very hard to get decisions out of it. So in all three ways, this is going to hurt the effort.
Ambassador James Jeffrey and another analyst, Kirk Sowell of the Jordan-based Inside Iraqi Politics, believe Mr. Abadi looks increasingly incapable to carry out reform. As the Philippines awaits an international arbitration ruling on a challenge to China's claims to nearly all of the South China Sea, it is already becoming clear that regardless of which way the decision goes, the dispute is intensifying. VOA's Bill Ide has more from Beijing.
China says Washington's growing military ties and presence in the region is what is driving up tensions in the South China Sea. Not Beijing's vast claims that cut into other countries' exclusive economic zones, or EEZs. Despite international calls for Beijing to abide by the decision, China says it will ignore the ruling, which is expected in the coming weeks. U.S. officials say the buildup is not aimed at China, but concerns about Beijing's intentions and actions in the region are clearly playing a role.
We're strengthening our military role in the region, but that isn't in order to provoke anything. It's to continue to stand with the system of principles and peace and security that has kept, that has allowed this region to prosper for many decades.
What actions China may take in response is unclear. Some suggest that much like it has done elsewhere, Beijing may start reclaiming land to build up Scarborough Shoal, a disputed reef China calls Huang'an Island. The reef is a little less than 200 kilometers from Subic Bay and well within the Philippines' EEZ. Chinese officials haven't ruled out that possibility.
I want to reiterate that the Scarborough Shoal is an inherent part of the Chinese territory. No matter what kind of action that China may take or not, it is something within the scope of China's sovereignty.
Either way the ruling goes, Beijing will not be silent. Just this weekend, a U.S. aircraft carrier was denied entry to Hong Kong. The carrier is the same one Defense Secretary Carter boarded in April while it was operating in the South China Sea. China has also been wooing support for its claims, with Russia putting its weight behind Beijing. Three Southeast Asian nations have also voiced support as well, but only one of them actually has claims in the disputed waters. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
U.S. financial markets posted modest gains on Monday. Companies like Fitbit, Tesla, and Alibaba reporting their earnings this week. We're joined by VOA economic correspondent Jill Malandrino from New York on their potential market impacts.
You know, it's really interesting, Jim, because it seems as if the hot tech, hot social media stocks are really what's taking center stage these days. It's no longer Alcoa kicking off the earnings season or the big banks like JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs. Anytime you get a company like Apple, Google reporting, that's when you get a lot of the media frenzy. And we're going to see that again this week, even though we're about 65% over earnings season. The larger sectors represented in the S&P this week will be travel, consumer, some of the energy and refining names. But like you said, the focus is really going to be on Fitbit. It's going to be on Tesla, and it's going to be on Alibaba. Of the three, I think Tesla is going to be interesting to watch because big American automaker Ford reported numbers last week, and GM as well, and they had record quarters. Ford especially blew it out of the water, as we say in the trading world. And I'm curious to see if it's Ford growing with the electrical car segments. Could that potentially take some business away from a Tesla? Tesla, when they announced the $35,000 S model, it was way oversubscribed. So can they actually fulfill that demand? Do they have the production capacity to get these cars to customers? So it's going to be really interesting to see how Tesla plays out. Fitbit has had some nice traction lately. In fact, Fitbit and Alibaba announced a new partnership together where Alibaba is going to be carrying the Fitbit devices for the Chinese market. And as we talk about all the time right now, China, India, Africa, those emerging market developing hotspots is really where we're seeing fresh new growth and demand. So Fitbit could have a lot of future growth and room to run here as well.
Well, 30 years ago when Forrest Gump invested in some fruit company, mm-hmm. he didn't have to worry about money anymore, but investors are a little worried about Apple at this point.
Yeah, you know what? The NASDAQ was actually going into trade this morning, was on its way for an 8-day losing streak, and we haven't seen that in just about 18 years. A big part of it is Apple. A big part of it is tech stocks had a fantastic run. They participated in that move from the February 11th low. But I think Apple's a unique situation because we're going from a company that was always known for its growth since the iPhone has come out. So the question is, what's next? Hardware is not what's growing these days. It's more of software and services. Where's the innovation coming from? So Apple needs to focus on services, making more ground with enterprise, meaning the business segment, and really developing that ecosystem where you have an Apple iPhone. And although a Samsung might be more sexy version of the smartphones these days, are you locked in that ecosystem where you need all of your Apple apps? So we're witnessing a transformation in Apple right now.
While investors try to figure out which way Apple is going to go, we always know that we should go to New York for the best information on the financial front. Jill Malandrino is there. Jill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Country superstar Martina McBride has a new CD out. International Edition's David Byrd tells us she's returning to her country roots.
I'm reckless and senseless. I've jumped on the fences, abandoned all the rules, and crashed like a fool out of...
Fans will know Martina McBride's huge voice from such hits as Wild Angels or Independence Day. The four-time Country Music Association Female Vocalist of the Year has sold 18 million albums in her 24-year-long career. But Reckless is a return to her country roots. It's her first album of country material in 5 years, and the title track is the first single released. McBride says that it speaks of a time in her life when she herself was reckless, but Martina found stability in the unconditional love of her husband, John.
But I think it's just about everybody will have their own story. You know, they'll have their own person who gives them that kind of love and who is reckless enough to love them no matter what. So I just think, I thought it was really a vulnerable lyric. I thought it was really a heartfelt lyric. I feel like it's an honest lyric, and I don't know, it just blew me away.
Martina McBride says she had a good feeling about the song. The 49-year-old says she also got some input from her daughters when it came time to pick tunes for the new CD.
They hear stuff, you know, from the demo stage all the way through the final finished record, and sometimes I'll say, what do you think of this song, or what do you think of this part that we did, or I'll play them something, and, you know, I played Just Around the Corner for Emma when we were finished with it, and she just started crying, and it was like, it's a good sign.
This is Martina McBride's first CD with her new label, Nash Icon. Two of Nashville's most respected producers, Nathan Chapman and Dan Huff, produced the CD, and every song showcases McBride's powerful vocal range. Martina says that she felt comfortable working with the new label, and it shows in the final product.
I had a lot of time. With the one thing the new label did was give me a lot of time to make this record. They didn't put a deadline or a lot of pressure on getting it done. So I had a lot of time and patience to really find the right songs, wait for the right songs to come in, and that made a big difference, I think, too.
Martina McBride's new CD, Reckless, is on sale now in the United States. In Washington, I'm David Byrd. I know I'm
reckless, and we thank you so much for joining us for today's International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
May 3rd is World Press Freedom Day. This day of observance was established by the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, or UNESCO, to raise awareness of the importance of press freedom. This year, UNESCO is highlighting the fact that a free and independent media are crucial to human advancement and development. At this time of turbulence and change across the world, including new challenges that require global cooperation and action, the need for quality information has never been so important, said Director General of UNESCO Irina Bokova. This requires a strong environment of press freedom and well-functioning systems to ensure the people's right to know. Yet, over the past several years, in every part of the world, we see an accelerating trend by both state and non-state actors to stifle media and internet freedom. According to the recently issued State Department Country Reports on Human Rights, in too many countries, governments crack down on the fundamental freedoms of expression and association by jailing reporters for writing critical stories, and they did so in numerous and varied ways. Some passed new laws or used existing laws to selectively persecute, harass, intimidate, and prosecute journalists, independent media, and bloggers critical of the sitting regime or its actions. Others chose to view criticism as a targeted insult and chose to prosecute journalists under new or existing, frequently vaguely worded laws against insulting the head of state or the government. Elsewhere, a government used anti-terror and insult laws to prosecute journalists and to either drive opposition media outlets out of business or to bring them under state control. And so, on this day, let us remember the crucial role that free media play in keeping society free and healthy. Let us stand up in support of journalists under threat and of media in danger of being censored or shut down. And remember those journalists who lost their lives while exercising their profession. The world must unite in the global campaign to end impunity for crimes committed against journalists, since some 90% of crimes committed against journalists have gone unprosecuted, and less than 7% of cases in which journalists have been killed have been resolved.
Far from threatening the democratic process, wrote Secretary of State John Kerry in his preface to this year's Human Rights Report, a free press and open civil society are the release valve and lifeblood of a thriving democracy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.